Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a valley that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening here in Central Kentucky for episode number 405. And this is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting to you tonight. And tonight I'm joined by the wonderful, the vivacious, and the loquacious Holly Phillippe. Holly, she's in already.
Hello. I have a little cold, so don't mind me. You know, that's the usual. Yeah. I can't stay away from it. I can't wait for freaking summer.
Well, we kind of got spring weather today, oddly enough.
Yeah. Good.
It was a very, very nice. So maybe it's going to arrive a little bit earlier this year, but somehow knowing Kentucky weather, I doubt it. I'm sure we'll have another bout of cold before all this is done.
I must say, I want to give a shout out to all my friends, and well, I consider them family, that showed up to my birthday bash and all the great gifts I got, and we just had a wonderful time, and me and Steve went and was able to go see Disturbed Monday night, and that was phenomenal. So yeah, I've had an interesting week, but the kids went on this camp thing and they've come home and one is sick, so here we go. Germ factory, you know, that's how it is.
Oh yes. Unfortunately. But this week
is upwards and onwards.
Yes. Onwards and upwards. Exactly. But it's been a lot of fun though. We did get to see Disturbed on Monday, and we're in the 12th row, second floor section, and it was just awesome. I mean, I had followed them since their very first album came out, when their debut came out, and just never had gotten a chance to see them live, and finally did at Rupp Arena the other night, and wow, what a show. I mean, loads of pyro and great performances, and the opening bands were Falling in Reverse and Plush. Of the two, I personally love Plush, really liked Plush a lot, and hard melodic hard rock band. Sounds a little Alice in Chains influence I could hear in there, and a great lead vocalist and a really good group. And then Falling in Reverse, of course, very popular, and they put on a good show. I mean, it's not a band that I am heavily into, but I mean, they really are solid and put on a really high energy set. And then of course Disturbed was just everything I expected, and then some. David Draiman is just amazing, and just vocally, and all the guys got solos and showed, you know, what top tier musicians they are. And of course they have a great catalog to draw from, so the set was incredible. And they were counting the three solos, there were 20 songs played in the set, so it was a full show and packed arena, and the energy was there, the vibes and everything. It was just absolutely a great night. So yeah, that was a lot of fun to get out and check out Disturbed. So yeah, little concert report. Yeah, no, Holly enjoyed it. So a lot. Yeah, that was actually my surprise birthday anniversary present for Holly, was getting her down to the nice floor seats for this one. So this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can feel the heat off the flames, and oh my God, what a show. The only other band I've seen to outdo that would be Kiss, of course, because they are very theatrical, but holy shit, I mean, they were just amazing. And David Draven, the third lead singer, he sounds just like he did 20 years ago. I mean, live. He's insane to me. I mean, he still sounds the same.
Yeah, top flight singer. And yeah, show was great. I mean, yeah, Kiss is out of this world. And then also I also put Trans-Siberian Orchestra, if you get a chance to see them. They have a stage show that's up on that level. But this one was really good. I mean, they had a lot of cool stuff, a lot of pyro and really cool light rigging and, with the movable light rigs and did a lot of cool stuff. So, yeah, the stage show was definitely cool. They gave you your money's worth and then some. It was a great show by all. So, yeah, I'm still buzzing a little bit about the concert. You know, it's been cracking up some Disturbed the past couple of days. But, yeah, it's been still getting some work.
They played 20 songs. That's crazy.
Yeah, 20, counting the solos. Yeah, 20 songs.
Yeah.
And all the big ones. So it was great. And, there you go, a little impromptu report there from Disturbed, and of course, then the big news today that Slayer reunited, so Steve is a very happy guy today. and one of the two shows they're reuniting for is in Louisville, Kentucky, even better, at Louder Than Life, so yeah, I got to figure out how to get to that. I've never been to Louder Than Life, and it's just every year, just like something I want to go so bad to that. So many good bands play it, but hey, you know, we'll see how it goes. But we got looks in the chat room. It is open, so go ahead and refresh your page. If you have any trouble logging in right now? It looks like the first one in tonight was Duane Hearn Moon, and thank you, Moon, for coming out the other night with Holly's birthday party. It was great to see you in person. Just my only regret is I was hoping you all were going to be able to come over and stay later that night and visit for a while. That's my only regret, because we can sit down and chill and have a few bourbons together and visit, because you're always just a blast to be around. And it was a fun night of karaoke and pool playing and hanging out at the bar and all that good stuff. So it was a good time. There he is. There's Mood. Yeah, I'm glad you had a good time, man. And but we're getting stuff done, and we are getting a lot done. Last week we've had a lot of great announcements that have come out. So I am going to catch you up real quick on the Imaginarium news, and then we'll give you the folks that brought you tonight's show. And we got a great guest tonight, someone that's never been on the show and nor has ever been to Imaginarium. So yes, it's somebody new for us to both Holly and myself to get to know tonight. So this is gonna be a lot of fun. But as far as the Imaginarium news, we did have one new spotlighted guest. We had three new panelists announced, a new individual patron, and we added four new panels and three new workshops. Not bad for a week since we announced, gave you our latest announcements last week. So we'll kick it off with the spotlighted guest, none other than award-winning author, editor, publisher, and podcaster, William Joseph Roberts. Yes, that William Joseph Roberts of Three Ravens Publishing. Yes, a News Fuel podcast. Hillbilly and Muse Fuel podcast. And yeah, he hosted all those great networking events at Imaginarium and will do so this year. Just a great guy, a lot of fun. Also a fellow fan of the metal world as us. And we told him all about our going to see that Disturbed show. So great guy, but definitely a reason alone to come to Imaginarium. Yeah. Three Ravens Publishing is phenomenal. His writing's fantastic, and just all around, just really, really talented individual who is always willing to mentor and share what he knows. So, yeah, he's definitely absolutely the Imaginarium kind of person, that we seek for the event. Just a great guy who really likes to help other creatives as well. So. Fantastic, fantastic person. Then we also had Devin Erickson and Nini Mohammed and David Sheridan all announced as panelists. And Devin Erickson will be coming for the first time, an author, very popular debut science fiction novel. Definitely someone that you need to be have an eye out for. Then also Nini Muhammad, who is an author and actor, musician, and motivational speaker. Great guy, great guy. He has been to the convention before, and that's definitely a super, super cool individual. Definitely you want to meet him. And then, of course, the amazing David Sheridan, 3D printing artist, writer, content creator. He's on TikTok and YouTube and all that good stuff, but he's a game designer as well. Very multifaceted, creative, super, super good guy. And he's also the founder of LI Works, which is one of our sponsors. LI Works does 3D printing services from concept to physical output. And he has an arsenal of 3D printers now. So, yeah, if you want to come up with some amazing custom merch and you're an author or a filmmaker, yeah, he's the one you definitely want to talk to. He can make those little statues and figurines. He knows how to work in different materials. Really cool stuff.
Whoa.
So yeah, definitely.
You know what we
definitely
need? You know what we need? We need a little moon, a moon wrestler, little figurine.
Yes. Yeah, moon
That's
is a wrestler
need.
Figurine. That's what we need.
Man,
that would be awesome.
Have his logo on the shirt.
Yeah, then have a Kerry Canetsy figure too. We can start a Imaginarium line of wrestling figures. And moon and. Yeah, that'd be great. That would be good idea. Mark that down. We're definitely gonna look into that. Definitely, I'm serious. That's a good idea. Good one, Holly.
David
good one.
David would love that.
Yes, he would. He would get a kick out of that. He's got the same love of things that we do. So yeah, no, he would. And then we also have a new individual patron that we announced, and that is Geek Girls Academy, and they do author services. They have the right to market approach, and they are absolutely fantastic, and definitely. Subscribe to our e-newsletter because they're going to be giving out some specials that are available for our crowd. And they came aboard as an individual patron, Geek Girls Academy. These do help us a lot. So yeah, thank you very much to Geek Girls Academy. And sorry they can't make it in person this year. Definitely appreciate the support, but hopefully their schedule will allow them to come in person in 2025. So then we also have, last but not least, today we announced 4 new panels and 3 new workshops. I'll go ahead and give you a quick overview of those. We have AI in the arts, evil or good. Yes, the red hot topic of AI. And this is going to be a very overview kind of panel discussing use of AI in film, writing, gaming, and art. And talking about the issue of whether of it as a tool and or as a theft of others in creative works. So, yes, so it should be a very timely discussion, and I have a lot of good information. We have a panel on lyrical creation, and as you might guess, it's going over the basics for songwriting and developing lyric writing skills and how to elevate and promote your film, game, or books using the medium of songwriting. So, yeah, it's going to be a really nice panel. We also have one on screenwriting basics. And this is for those who have ideas for a film or series, and also for those wanting to take their novels or games or other things to an adaptation kind of route. So this is all about the basics of screenwriting. We also have another panel on submitting clean copy, and this is a good one. That's going to be focused on the editor's point of view, and they discuss tips, tricks, and insights to help you submit as clean a copy as possible in your written work to editors and publishers. Then our workshop editions, Imaginator guest and Michael F. Blake, not one you're wanting to miss, heavily experienced individual, pitching your book, a home run, or a foul. And it's all about pitching your book to a publisher and developing a good, effective pitch and how your pitch letter is as important as a well-written manuscript. And he's going to show, Michael is going to show you how he pitched his books, what led them to be published, and yes, and he's got some amazing books in the area of historical biography, especially with his books on Lon Chaney, iconic actor Lon Chaney, and then Theodore Roosevelt, and upcoming books he has coming on iconic American film director John Ford. So then we also have showing versus telling, and the presenter for this is Rebecca Johnson, and this is all about showing versus telling in the art of writing prose and showing and character arcs and creating emotional impact. It's going to be a really, really good workshop. And then last but not least, the other workshop we have that we announced today is So You're a Brand New Author, How Do I Submit a Story? And that's going to be presented by Jonna Hayden. And as she says, learn from the gang at Raconteur Press about following guidelines and the reasons behind them. So, yeah, it's going to be a really good workshop for authors on how to submit stories properly and all about guidelines. So, yeah, I definitely want to keep an eye out for that. So there you go. Now you're up to date. That's a lot of information. But good. Do you have any notes to add to that, Holly?
No, you got my panels of workshops. So.
Yeah, we got a bunch
I
there.
I got more to work.
Yep, but that's a lot. Yeah, three new panelists, one new spotlighted guest, one new individual patron, four new panels, and three new workshops. Yeah, and that's all since we met with you last week here on the Star Chamber Show. So not too bad. And now I'm going to go over to our recognize the great folks that brought you tonight's show, and that would be Sandy Leonard, the Genre Blender, and that fine fellow Ren Garcia, who, yes, we've got to get him out. Got to get him out this summer. So keep it up. Keep pressuring him. Yes, we got to get him out. he's becoming too much of a hermit, but I know he wants to come, so we got to get him out this summer. But here is Sandy, and I'll give you a little bit from Sandy, and then we're going to shoot over and give you a little bit from Ren with that famous question. But here's Sandy Leonard.
February is the month of love, and author Sandy Lender has something cynical and satirical with just the right amount of romance to make you swoon. It's Vampire Satire, set in the Rocky Mountains in her Fairy Holidays series. Welcome to the Rose Chateau, where ghosts and vampires team up with fairies against trolls and monsters. Check out the crazy adventure of My Fairy Valentine from Sandy Lender, wherever fine books are sold, and fall in love with vampires again. And if you just want some romantic read recommendations this month, check out the Sandy Says Read BookTube channel on YouTube.
That's right, folks. Sandy Says Read. And while you're listening to the show tonight, hop over to YouTube, look up Sandy Lender and her channel, and give her a subscribe and hit that little bell with the notifications and get them all, because she has a lot of great content over there. Sandy Says Read. And here's a little bit from Ren Garcia with that famous question.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Oh,
yes.
Yes,
we are. Indeed, we are. And yes, and as we declare how weird we are, yes, that we're going to lead right into bringing our guests for tonight aboard. And this is going to be fun, because this is the first time tonight's guest has appeared on the Star Chamber Show and has not yet been to Imaginarium. So, yes, we are looking forward to this very much. And tonight's guest is a speculative fiction author whose debut fantasy novel, Heartmaster, is the first book in the Legacy of the Mad King series. And so it is my honor and privilege to bring onto the show for the very first time the one, the only, the writer himself, Nicholas Everhart. And Nicholas, your microphone should be on.
I guarantee that I'm weird enough for you. Fantastic. I will correct you. This would not be my very first Imaginarium. I believe we went. It was me, Wendy Vogel, and Jerry Faye Maynard. We were at, I think, either the 2016 or 2017 Imaginarium.
Wow, were you there?
Cool.
You attended.
Yeah, wow.
Well, hey, that's a good surprise.
Yeah, we attended. Wendy actually did a couple of panels, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good time. We met this lawyer who was working on a legal procedural there. He was so enamored of the feedback that we gave him that he actually came up to our Cincinnati meetup group twice.
No, he had not come yet. Not in 2016.
Oh,
not quite. No, it was not somebody else.
I don't quite remember his name. Sincere guy. I think it was Jeff, actually.
Was there Jeff? There's an Eric, too. Eric, I can't think of his last name right now. It's terrible. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you go to Seth? We've been at the Holiday Inn?
The new one, the current venue.
Or was we at the old Ramada?
No, I don't think so. I believe that was the last year you were at that particular venue. It was, slightly on the rundown side. And yeah.
Yes.
It literally looked like the apocalypse.
No, we've upgraded
our scheduling.
Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah,
we've upgraded big time.
Upgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole different thing now. You're
yeah,
going to be blown
great.
Away. You're going to be like, whoa. Yeah.
But hey, that's awesome to hear, though. I'm glad you have been to one. But yeah, I still call it the new venue. We've been there for 4 years now, but it just feels so new. I mean, because it's such a good facility.
They're so good to it.
Yeah, and they are so good. So yeah, if you can make it out again, yeah, we've got a treat waiting for you because it's
in
nice.
One building, there's no long hallways waiting on tricycles, twins on tricycles. There's no, you know, none of that. I mean, it's one building. Everything's downstairs. We got the whole entire hotel. And then you just take an elevator or stairs, whatever, and go to your rooms upstairs. And there's a bar.
It's
there's
easy.
A restaurant. There's everything right there. Cool. Everything.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
I do remember there was this incredible panel there that I loved, and it was about introspective writers and the difficulties that they have in interacting not only with their peers but also with their fans, and I do remember that was a really great panel. That was such an incredible idea for a panel.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you.
Holly has a passion for the programming for sure. So
I do.
always trying to put up some unique stuff. And, of course, that's why we're mentioning she addresses the hot topics. That's why we have all the AI stuff coming up this summer. But, I mean, that's not the only session about AI. We have others coming. But she always tries to get a nice spectrum there. But, yeah, glad you enjoyed that and remember that. And Holly has been, talking to me about you quite a bit leading up to the show. She says she's gotten a chance to chat with you a bit. And definitely, since you're referred over to us to be on the podcast, and so I've been looking forward to it, especially since you're in my zone too, because you are your first novel is in the fantasy genre, so that's right up my alley. So I am looking forward to this.
Tell us a little bit about the novel.
Yeah, the Heartmaster.
Okay, so to just kind of give you the elevator pitch, Heartmaster is a fantasy novel about a thief who steals a bracelet imbued with the spirit of a knight that gets him dragged into a war between the gods. The first thing he does is try to go look up an ex-love who may be able to get it off, and then he finds out that she is part goddess. And it just gets crazier from there. He ends up in competition with a mountain-bred barbarian and a female paladin and has to be led around by a thousand-year-old champion to make sure he doesn't go a little too awry. And the best part is the knight is continually talking to him and criticizing his actions as he goes along. One of my major influences is Robert E. Howard. So I tried to put a lot of old school fantasy in there. I loved how quickly YA books read. So I try to interject as much of that like fast pace to it as well. So it's a pretty tight read at 350 pages. So far, I'm sitting at about 50 reviews on Amazon with a 4.9 rating. So apparently, I didn't do too much wrong.
Very nice. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I noticed you had a nice batch of reviews when I was looking at the book. And Yeah, you're speaking my language with Robert E. Howard. It's one of my influences as well. So, yeah, I was interested. Yeah, because you've got a kind of elements of sword and of good pulp era sword and sorcery mixed with kind of a YA kind of aesthetic. That sounds cool. That sounds like a nice.
Yeah, I just love how fast YA books move. So when I was doing the revisions on Heartmaster, I wanted to make that pace as fast as possible.
I don't see,
very
but
nice.
He didn't understand. He don't read your YA. He finally is writing. He wrote a YA series, which is phenomenal. And I'm editing the second book in that series. But I told him, you know, that was my favorite genre for years. It's always because it's relaxing. I don't have to think. I could shut my brain off, enjoy the ride, sit back, relax, and read it. You know, and read it in a couple sessions, and maybe one, you know, depending on the size and the time I have. Yeah, I love the quickness of YA, but, you know, I don't read it all the time. I mean, I read everything, you know, being an editor, I have to. I read everything, but, yeah, I do. That's my heart.
Well,
I do love it.
Well, in my defense, I will say that one of my foundational inspirations as a child was C.S. Lewis with the Chronicles of Narnia, and it wasn't called YA back then. It wasn't specifically called YA, but it most certainly is a YA series. I mean, absolutely. So it's that's at my core. But yeah, I have love for the YA world but I find it interesting to blend those two though with Robert E. Howard kind of grit and dark edges,
cool.
You know, with YA. That sounds like a cool blend. That definitely
got
me intrigued.
Heartmaster became such an evolving project because I've been working on it off and on for about 8 to 10 years, and it's actually based on a short story that I wrote 30 odd years ago.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Well, kudos to
very
you.
Very cool.
It
had a very interesting road to get completed. And I will say that I made the brilliant idea about 12 years ago. I joined a writer's group here called Cincinnati Fiction Writers, and it is probably the most amazing group that I've ever been a part of. They've become much more like family, and it is a great place for a professional to like hone their skills, because we offer fair critique that is gentle but firm, all sort of tailored around the idea of becoming professionally published. So it is a great,
absolutely,
safe environment that it is crazy. We have people that sometimes drive would drive as much as 6 hours to come and get a critique from us. And now that we've gone online, we've had like people from New Zealand and Chicago and all over joining up. So, and
nice.
You kind of balance that with like opposing weeks where we all get together at local Irish bars so that we still get to see each other, most of each other face to face. And it's just a really great dynamic. I've really enjoyed being a part of that group. And I will say that I would not be the author I am today, and Heartmaster wouldn't be the book that it is today without people like Jerry Faye Maynard, Scott McMahon, who is also my publisher. And Wendy Vogel, who is one of my heroes in the writing world.
Yeah, Wendy's awesome. And I know Wendy and Jerry Faye Maynard. I'm familiar with them, obviously from the conference and everything. Yeah, great folks. Yep. And we just hopped right past you. There's another excellent writing group up in Dayton, the Right Writers of Dayton. And so, we just passed by you just not too long ago to speak to them, as guest speakers. But definitely, have to keep your group on the radars when I talk to people from Cincinnati area, to recommend you guys to them. Yeah, because definitely that's cool. It sounds
it's
like
hard
a good
to find
group.
Good, honest critiques. You know, a lot of the smaller groups you find is people, pardon the French, blowing smoke up each other's asses, and that's not what you need. Or what you want.
Or there's other groups where they just try to tear others down because they want to feel a little high and mighty. And those groups, there's some toxicity to them, and those groups can be really damaging to writers. So when you find a good balanced group,
definitely
the right kind of group.
We try to hit that balance. We strive very hard to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do up there in Dayton. Good bunch, man. Yeah, we'll have to come and check out one of your meetings. That'd be great. Yeah, we.
They had us come up. One of the other amazing things is I didn't pay for any editing at all for my book, and I had 6 editors.
Good. That's a story in itself, right there.
One of the things that I have always done is I have offered to beta read for people. Anyone who's working on anything, I will always read it, no matter what, and usually try to get feedback within about a week or two. And then also, if somebody I know has wrote a book and published it, I will always review it, no matter what. In fact, my reviews became somewhat famous within the local group here because I don't do like 3 sentences. I do like 4 paragraphs. So when it came time for me to like start looking for people to do editing, I got all that free just because I had done so many favors and worked with people in the past on helping their own.
Fantastic.
Got a
6-pack of editors there, 6, not bad.
I do. And a good trick to get Wendy available to do dev edits for you at any time is get her book cover tattooed to her leg. That just like completely like set that. I got her Horizon Alpha book cover tattooed to my leg about 4 years ago.
Nice.
Because man, she was just such an amazing. An amazing help to me and to everybody in the group. So I love her writing. She's probably the best and most technically precise fiction writer I've ever worked with in my life.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
We had an author on here the other day that is going to have their characters, their whole like book series, put on their legs. And I said, well, that is a genius idea. I never thought about that.
Eva Vertrice.
Eva
Vertrice.
Like, that is so cool. You know, I never heard of anybody doing that. So, yeah, and you come on now and say you had someone else's. That is phenomenal. A praise to them. You know, I mean, that's an honor to immortalize. I mean, that's neat. I really like that.
Cool.
And Wendy and her husband Andrew actually came down while I was getting the outline done, and they were really digging it because the tattoo studio that I chose just happened to be like literally almost right across the street from their house. We had a lot of fun with that, and there was some heckling going on, and yeah, I loved how it turned out. And then sometime later this year, I'll be getting my Heartmaster tattoo. It'll probably be like now I'm like torn between like the main character of Draven, who is a thief who steals the bracelet. And then there's also like his sort of protector slash mentor, Alyssa Fairoaks, who is a 1,000-year-old champion, very like hard as nails and with a biting sarcastic wit. So I'm torn. I have great artwork for both of them. So yeah, maybe I'll do Draven on one side and Alyssa on the other. So
there you go. Yeah, do both.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Very cool.
And evidently you'll have to leave some space because, you know, as I mentioned before in the introduction, this is the first book in the Legacy of the Mad King series. So you're going to have others to put on there in the future. So.
Yes, I will. So Draven's main love interest in the first book is actually going to be the focal point of the second book, you know, how her story. And I can't say too much about it because spoilers.
Right.
I don't want anybody's enjoyment of the book, but it's going to be very interesting, and it'll be fun to explore her character the same way I got to do with Draven in the first book. But I kind of try to delve into all of the champions, even the bad guy, Sigurus, who is a slave turned warlord, determined to free his people at all costs, and is willing to kill any number of people to do that and make a couple of deals with the devil along the way.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Now this is my question. That's a good segue. I was going to ask you, did you create a religion or a basis for the gods and goddesses, or did you draw from like Roman or, you know, the different gods and goddesses? Did you do research and do that, or did you create your own a world dealing with them?
So it's a little, so it is partially drawn from the Rybert E. Howard Hyborian age mythos. Different names and different concepts, of course, with a little bit of shades of Sarah Douglas as the Axis series. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that or not. She's an amazing writer in the 90s. Loved her work. So I kind of take the inspiration from, like, both of those places. So just to kind of give you some highlights, there were original 12 gods. There are 9 now because a really, really, really bad guy, this is why Sigurus has raised their slaves, killed 2 of them. So his people were put into slavery forever by the goddess Valeris, who is the goddess of justice, supposedly, most of the time. She's a little iffy on that. And then there are other gods, Regnir, who is a mountain god of emotion, and then Draven's god is Nerys, who is a goddess of both luck and death.
Mm-hmm.
And several others. I kind of didn't want to go into too many. You'll see more gods and more relics turn up as the series unfolds. Currently, I'm planning it out to be a trilogy because I have another trilogy that I'm actually in the middle of writing the first book on. Also, that will probably be coming out sometime in 2025 if all goes well.
Is that the other trilogy going to be in the same universe, or is it different entirely?
No, it's completely different. So this story is about a human and dragon king who end up going to war with each other over their shared prejudices and racism and end up causing an apocalypse that then they are tasked by the triple goddess, I'm a witch, to fix.
Fantastic.
So, very cool.
And the dragons in that book are, you know, they're sentient. They make their own tools. They use it. They kind of rely more on magic than anything else. But I came up, that was another one. I came up with the idea. I wrote like the last chapter of the book, like 35 years ago. And I just never really felt like I had learned enough world building to really do it justice. So like I'm about half to 2/3 of the way done with the rough draft on that one.
Very nice. So yeah, you've been developing these for quite a while, both of them.
Quite a while, yeah. I love
quite a while.
Them.
Yeah.
Mixed match.
The blessing and curse. I have a really great day job that tends to run over top of the writing quite a bit of the time. So there are times that my writing has had to go on the shelf for a couple of months or a couple of years at a time. But you know, now I've got a really good publisher in Dragon Street Press. So I'm a whole lot more focused on the writing and getting books out in a timely manner.
Very cool.
So with Heart, Matt,
would you like to do this as a full-time job down the road, or would this be like a retirement option for you to have fun with, you know, and roll with?
I think every writer is going to say yes to that. You know, I could easily, financially, if I could make it happen, if I could retire tomorrow and just write all day long and publish books and mentor authors and do talks at shows, that would be my dream job. So, and definitely my dream retirement gig.
Right, right. You'd be surprised. A lot of people's like, no, they just enjoy writing and they just do it like as a hobby.
I've been doing IT work for about 30-odd years now, and at the age of 52, I'm getting a little old to learn a new technology every year like I used to. So,
That's why I
was kind of interested in the AI stuff before, because I come down on both sides of that, because I use AI to write code for me in my day job. But and even in writing, like when I'm going out and getting something for an artist, I will actually go to playgroundai.com and I will actually type some stuff in, and then I will send those things to my artist as references. So I think there are good things that you can use AI for, and you can't resist it completely because it's never going to go away. So you have to learn how to use it and promote the use of it in a disciplined, creative way that is not undermining other writers, artists, and in my case, coders as well.
Correct.
So
right.
Like anything,
I totally
it's a good
agree.
Because if you're using Autocrit, if you're using my favorite, which is Pro Writing Aid, you're still using an AI.
Yeah, Grabberly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Grabberly.
Yep.
Yeah. But you still can't rely on it fully. That's what I tell everybody.
No.
Even for, like, you cannot self-edit. I don't care who you are. You're not going to have a clean book if you self-edit because your brain, it's psychologically impossible because your brain fills in stuff that's not there, no matter how many times you read it. And AI doesn't always catch that. You use it as a tool, but you can't depend on that. You know, you've got to have a huge pair of eyeballs. And they don't understand.
Oh, yeah. I went through Prayer Writing Aid. I had like a 90% or higher score on every single one of my chapters. And we still ended up ripping my book apart and redoing sections of it and, you know, moving chapters around, you know, like reformatting some of the text. No program like that is ever going to take the place of a good developmental editor. And I think anyone who skips the developmental phase is doing themselves a complete disservice, because I will tell you that the first version of HeartMaster that I completed about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there was so much different. There were so many weird plot things, like Draven didn't end up getting the bracelet until like 2/3 of the way through the book. And I just made so many choices that at the time seemed brilliant. And there was some great writing in there. But the more I went over it with Wendy and Jerry and Scott, I just, you know, was clear that you know, Draven and the spirit in the bracelet, whose name is Ancelon, and was the former bearer of HeartMaster. HeartMaster is, by the way, a super powerful relic that can, you know, kind of do Witchblade-y type things. And by the way, I came up with this idea before Witchblade came out. I'm just telling you that.
Right.
I just they beat me to the publishing. But so if I had not gone out and gotten dev edits and good beta readers, I probably would have released a book that was nowhere nearly as good as the one that's on out there right now.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And
exactly.
So,
like I said, in the chat room, it's a tool, not a crutch. You know, you should always use AI as a tool, not a crutch. Don't depend on it.
Yeah, but I will say, though, when the stuff that debuted last week, though, on the filmmaking side of AI has a lot of people in film school suddenly sweating and getting heart flutters because, yeah, the stuff they showed was jaw-dropping as far as, doing text prompts to video sequences. And, they did intros to potential, like, movie concepts and stuff, and it just looked just mind-blowing. And there is some areas where, there's definitely some scare going on. And that's something that's going to be part of our discussions this summer. But, that's definitely, there's definitely, there's two sides to that, for sure. Definitely has a place, but a lot of people have forgotten Terminator.
And actually, there was another really fun, it's kind of silly, but also fun sci-fi movie that came out a couple of years ago that kind of dealt with that. It's basically where the moon starts falling out of the orbit, and they realize that the moon is this mega structure that was created by this race, you know, millions and millions and millions of years ago that were very like humans that developed AI, and AI got to the point where it decided it just didn't need the humans anymore. That was the bad part of the equation. So it, like, started
that's
wiping
it.
Them out everywhere they went.
Yep. That's the truth, because they're going to get so smart, they're going to be able to write, you know, they're going to write their own programs, and they're going to see humans as a disease. And it's going to be like...
Well, where it gets spooky,
you know,
is in the battlefield, where they're incorporating AI into drone warfare and robotics and things like that, and what that leads to, because we're obviously in the early stages of that phase, and that's definitely, I'm going to the weeds here a little bit, but there's definitely some, as Nicholas said, some Terminator-like concerns in the long run.
Oh, yeah,
because I
and with you being a programmer or coder, you understand these, you know. I like to hear
I work a lot in the cloud markets, mainly for an EHR platform, but so we basically, what we do is we actually take our AIs for you know, like our chatbots for, like, customer service or for, like, data analytics gathering, and we train them, and you train them, and you keep throwing data sets and data sets and data sets, and what you're doing is you're actually training this AI and teaching it how to be smarter and teaching it better. So we're already in the process of actually making AI more powerful with every day that goes by.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
It's definitely here. It's going to be here, and it's a matter of how we deal with it. So,
well,
for lack of a better word.
The only thing is, if you look back over the generation, we're Generation X, but you know that the Boomer generation, especially, but Generation X down, your Millennials, especially your Zs, are becoming more aware of the global concerns. So I think maybe I'm hopeful that AI will look at that and be like, well, they're trying to rectify what they've caused. You know, they're trying to reverse the damage that they've caused to the ocean and to the coral reefs and, you know, all that, the ozone layers, and see that, you know, we do need to coexist. So that's the hope, you know.
And also to Sandy's point in the chat, you know, like I think we're getting better at recognizing the way we behave to one another and trying to work where we can in rectifying that. Of course, there will always be those who kind of see that as a platform of anonymity. But I think as a culture, we're getting better and better about that as the years go by. And I hope that continues to. But you know, I'm
then,
hugging, which so you know, I always want to see the best in people.
Right.
And then you'd go out
right.
to your local Walmart and see how rude everybody is, and it just totally deflates you.
Yeah, there's always assholes. There's always going to be assholes, no matter what is. But you know, hopefully, population as a whole is trying to do better. You know, but yeah, you're always going to have assholes. That's just how the world, how the country crumbles.
Like that falling in reverse has a song just about that, and yes, they're proud of that.
Yes.
Oh, that was funny.
Oh, but, and by the way, I was glad to see that you got to see Disturbed in person. That is a show that cannot be missed.
No.
Oh.
And oh man, it was great. It was great.
That was amazing. I would go every time I possibly can. Now, I mean, that's the first time I got to go see them, and I loved them. I've loved them for, you know, two decades, and ever since my youngest son was in middle school, you know, I've loved them, and I'm like, wow. I mean, the songs they sang like a couple of newer ones, but it was like all the old stuff. He sounds the same. David Draven is just a great man. I mean, he got people up on stage. He talked to little children. And the people around us, I mean, metalheads, oh, my God, what a group of people. You know, everybody was so nice and considerate of each other and just.
Yes, nice crowd. Very much so.
Yeah, I used to have a corporate job for GE when I first moved here, and I got in trouble with my boss several times because Down With The Sickness was my ringtone.
Nice.
So we'd be sitting in the meeting room, and we'd be like, rat-a-tat-tatting, like going over like some virtualization technology, and then you would hear like Down With Sickness.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
I love
that. That is awesome.
Well, let me ask you this then. What is your writing routine? Do you play what music? Do you play? Do you play any? I mean, do you have a special place to go?
Y'all going to lose complete respect for me now.
No.
So
we've heard it all.
When I'm writing, I have a specific Pandora station, which I created from a Miranda Lambert radio station. My wife got me into Miranda Lambert about like, I don't know, like about 10 years ago. So I have this specific station that I have trained, and it's nothing but angry, bitchy, scorned female vocalists.
Yes.
Miranda Lambert, Kacey Musgraves, Amy Lee,
maybe
Laura Branigan.
Well, I have a whole new respect for you.
Stevie Nicks.
Yes.
Oh.
What?
Yes.
God.
Love Stevie Nicks.
So,
man.
That's what I tend to write to. Like, and my friends in my group think I'm insane that I actually have, like, they can't write with anything that has lyrics in it. Yes.
I can. I do. I've done it for decades. No problem. I understand.
Metal. It cranks metal. And I don't know how you write like that, but I can't. I play, what do you call it, aquarium music. You know, I like my aquarium music when I need to focus. or by medieval tavern music or ambiance or Harry Potter library or, you know, in Hogwarts.
Now, the weird thing is, when I'm listening to music,
Nicholas,
for pleasure,
it's this.
I listen to a lot of Iron Maiden.
Nice.
I'm a huge fan.
You are right.
Like,
I'm a massive Kiss fan.
Kiss concert when I was 5 years old, rock and roll over. And you know, been a several, like Motley Crue was another big one for me for a while. Pantera, Black Sabbath. I'm a very big metalhead at heart.
We're speaking the same language.
Motorhead.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, God, yeah.
We're speaking the same language. I actually saw Motorhead open for Black Sabbath on the Cross Purposes tour in the 90s. So I saw them both together in the same night. That was epic. But my first concert was Creatures of the Night back in 82 when I was in sixth grade. So, yeah, that was my first rock concert. So, Kiss. So, yeah, we got very similar territory here. And I was playing Power Slave today by Iron Maiden.
I will occasionally put on an old Doctor Who episode while I'm writing as well. Like, especially the first four or five Doctors. I'm a heretic in the sense that I actually prefer the first, you know, six or seven Doctors to most of the newer ones.
Yeah, I agree.
Nice.
I did like old Cumberbatch, though. I do like him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's not a Doctor yet. Well, Dr. Strange.
No.
I am looking forward to see what they do with Judy Got Was Run, and I was so sad when Jodie Whittaker's run was so abbreviated, but I've been a Doctor Who fan since, I want to say, like 1986 or 1987. First episode I saw was the very middle of Pirate Planet, written by Douglas Adams. And ever since then, I've been utterly obsessed.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, he's definitely.
I used to watch it with my brother when I was. He was a lot older than me, so I used to watch it with him back in the day. But I couldn't tell you the actors or anything. I'd have to go back and look. But you know, because I was young, I was a young kid. But yeah, I mean, I haven't watched it the past few years. I don't like the Doctors. I'm sorry.
And I will shamefully admit that I watch every single episode of Doctor Who once a year.
Nice.
I start
nice.
With Hartnell, and I watch every single episode that I can actually get. And I have most of the BBC restored ones where they've done the reanimation, some of the Telesnap ones, which are hard to watch but still worthwhile because you have the audio tracks.
Right.
But yeah, it's a little shameless.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
that
a Trekkie?
Cool.
Are you a Trekkie?
I am a Trekkie. I actually have a Star Trek communicator badge tattooed to my chest.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Who is your captain? Who's your captain?
My captain is it's a tough call now. At one time, I would have said Jean-Luc Picard. Now with Anson Mount's Captain Pike, it's a tough call because the writing on that show has been so good, and it has continued to improve with each episode. So I'm like, I'm on the fence now.
It's hard.
No kidding.
But God, I love Pike. Oh my God, I love Pike. But however,
oh, and the hair keeps getting higher every season.
I know, right? Right? It's higher the hair, closer to the Lord, they say, you know, and his keeps going. It keeps going. But Picard, oh my word, I'm telling you, I mean, he's the nostalgia. He's OG. You know, that's the captain. I have to stay loyal to Picard.
Oh, yeah, some of the arguments he had
with
John Delancey as Q, that was just sheer poetry.
Oh, yes. Yes. I agree. Totally. Steven, he just goes to sleep. I'm watching my Trekkie stuff. He's like, oh, Lord, here she goes. I'm like,
well,
yeah,
Well, you watch a lot of stuff, Holly. I can't keep up with it all. It's just.
Well, now here's a question for you guys. What's your drink of choice when writing?
When writing, I used to just have like a Monster Red Bull, something caffeinated when writing. I made the mistake of thinking that, hey, maybe having some drinks and while writing would be a good idea back in my college days, and I quickly realized that it was a complete disaster because I would think that I was writing the most brilliant stuff while writing, and then the next day I'd realize, no, it's quite the opposite. I save my bourbon for after writing, but when writing, I typically did. But I've been trying to get myself in gear health-wise the last few months, so I actually have cut out caffeine largely. I do plan to kind of slowly introduce it back, so I will look forward to having an energy drink again during my writing sessions, hopefully soon.
I became a diabetic about 7 or 8 years ago, and it was really tough, you know, like, because I used to mainline Coke like all day long. I would go through 6 to 9 cans of Coke a day. When I converted over to mostly water, that was a little bit of a rude awakening there for a while. Now, I will say that when I'm writing, I can't help doing like a couple of fingers of writer's tears when I'm actually creating. It just feels perfect.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys have never heard of writer's tears, it is an Irish whiskey.
Yes, I have.
Made by Walsh, and I absolutely love it. And they brought up last year these amazing like special editions where they take the whiskey after they make it, and instead of aging in the normal oak barrels, they actually put it in wine casks to age. They're not super expensive. They're about $100 a bottle, but there's the Marsala is by far the best of those. I just learned about those at my book launch that I had on the 17th of November, which was awesome. We did it at my favorite local Irish pub where my writers group meets every 2 weeks. And I didn't even think they would go for it. But like, you know, as soon as we mentioned it to the staff, they're like, oh my God, that would be great. We would be so honored if you would want to do that, Nick. Because we've been doing our meetup there for like over 10 years now. And so it was great. Like we took over like 1/3 of the bar, like one entire wing of the bar/restaurant for it. And I think we got about 50 or 60 people in for the book signing. It was a lot of fun. But the bar staff there had actually gone out and gone in together and got me this bottle of iced wine cask writer's tears.
Nice.
That is awesome.
Hey.
Yeah, that's like a total reversal because I've heard of this stuff. I've drank the stuff, the wine, that's been aged in bourbon barrels, but I've never had that aged in wine cask. That's like a total flip.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm curious
that
now.
It's really good. It's a little pricey, but it's very good.
Oh,
yeah.
I will say that it's a little stronger than regular writer's tears, but actually, that our bar has actually started carrying writer's tears just for me. That's when you know you're special.
That is awesome. I'm gonna have to mark that down as a must check out sort of thing. That does sound good. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the flavor. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, I will send you a list of those at some point on Facebook.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, we had I got a gift from our good friend David Sheridan over the weekend. He brought me down a bottle of Jefferson's aged bourbon, but he brought me the version that's aged at sea, and so they actually aged the bourbon on ships on the ocean. it's called Jefferson's Ocean Aged at Sea Bourbon.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same thing.
It's really good. But
yeah,
I ate a lot of bourbon in my 20s and 30s, and I just kind of got burned out on it. So now I then switched to, I think, Scotch for a while. And that kind of was cool, but I didn't really get it. But then I switched to Irish whiskey when I started going to this Irish pub, because I had a friend there at the time who was always a big fan of Picklebacks, where you do like a shot of Jameson and a shot of pickle juice together, which I know sounds hideous,
nice.
But it's actually quite good.
That's great.
And then I like Jameson, but Jameson just wasn't completely getting it, although they do have an orange Jameson that is fabulous. But then I discovered this Writer's Tear stuff. We were my wife and I had gone out for some weekend trip somewhere, and we saw it on like a shelf somewhere at a bar. And I looked it up, and like, you know, I eventually found a place here that carries it, the legendary Jungle Gyms of Cincinnati.
Oh yes,
big international grocery store. Everybody knows what Jungle Gyms is, or at least everybody who's ever been to Ohio. So they carried it, and ever since then I've been in heaven.
Yeah. Nice.
Double Dips makes me so happy because they got like the three rows of hot sauce. And Stephen knows I can drink hot. Oh, I live for hot sauce.
Yeah.
I still have a good immune system. I do not. I have a cold right now because the grandkids brought me home one. But yeah, I should have a wonderful immune system, but I guess it'd be worse without the hot sauce, right? But I love hot sauce. And they've got all kinds.
Yeah, that place is amazing. Yeah, we definitely.
So do you ride at Hope, or do you go to like coffee shops or like?
So I honestly don't know how people do coffee shop things, and maybe it's because I am a little on the introspective side. Well, I'm weird. I'm like a very extroverted introvert. So
an
oddity. Like I can't work out at a gym. Because it just feels weird because it's a very personal experience for me. And writing is the same thing. I can't write in it. Like I can't do those things where you go with like 10 other writers and you go and sit somewhere and you all write together. Like, because writing is a very personal experience for me. So I do like probably 80 to 90% of my writing at home. Now there are occasionally I will get together with a small group of friends and we'll go and rent a place for the weekend and then we'll just do nothing but like write all day and then critique each other's stuff in the evening and that I can usually handle. But yeah, as far as going to a coffee shop and writing, I would just be too distracted by the other people and like listening to them and trying to figure out what's going on in their head and figure out what their story is to actually ever get them. I used to try to go. Before our meetups, I would used to try to go an hour early and thinking, oh, I'll go write something. And then I never got anything done. So you put me in a group of people, I will almost never get anything done if there's somebody to talk to.
I'm the same way.
So most of my writing
is
done at home, usually on a Saturday or Sunday morning, occasionally like later at night, but not as much in the past couple of years.
So do you have a dedicated place or room at home that you write?
So, funny thing, no. Yes and no. I have a study filled with all of my cool writing things, you know, like printers, and I got a nice, you know, like, you know, 80-year-old desk in here, and like my Lego creations and all of my dinosaurs and various forms of fantasy and comic book artwork. And I never use it. Like, this is the first time I've used this room probably in 6 months. Most of Heartmaster was written sitting on the couch opposite my wife while we were watching Midsummer Murder on TV in the evening.
Oh.
That's probably where I wrote most of Heartmaster.
Wow.
Another weird thing about me, I love British mystery shows. Like I watch Midsummer Murder, Death in Paradise, Vera, Murdoch Mysteries. Technically, it doesn't count because that's Canadian, but yeah. So we watch those shows like crazy. We're actually just watching New Tricks, which is you guys have never heard of it. It's this really cool show about they put together this team of investigators from retired detectives. So they'll be all crusty retirees.
I'll have to check it out. We both love British comedy. There's nothing better. British comedy is just hysterical. They don't have all the, you know, political correct stuff that we do, but I mean, they're just hysterical. It's just funny. There was this one called, what was the bookstore, Steve? He would love
Oh, God,
that.
The one about That just, oh, my God, the one about the guy in the front of the bookstore, the alcoholic guy.
Mr. Black, you need to look up Black, Black bookstore.
Oh, yeah, my wife and I found this really awesome one that there was a British comedy about a woman who was haunted by the ghost of a rock star. And I can't remember the name of it, but it was so enchanting. It was so much fun to watch. And then there, I do love, and IT Crowd, which it's like their version of The Office, but so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll try. It's called Black Books.
Black Books
the series is called.
You need to look that up.
Yeah.
That is hysterical.
Hilarious.
Smokes like crazy, and he runs this bookstore. Oh, my God, it's absolutely hysterical if you love British stuff, you know.
No.
Yeah, they had a great show back in the 80s. It was about it was a guy who was tired of the rat race in London, so they decided they were going to leave the simple life, and they might have even called it the simple life. I can't remember. But so they're like doing farming, but they're doing it in their like London, you know, like little, you know, like 1/19th of an acre plot in London. In his overalls, and his friends are, you know, like, you know, in their, you know, like yuppie sweaters and whatever. It was a great show. I can't remember the name of it, but it was so much fun to watch.
Well, if you do, send it to me because I absolutely love it. We watch that Letter Kitty too. Do you watch Letter Kitty?
I have never seen that.
That's hilarious.
Gotta watch Letter Kitty. They're Canadian, but it's still it's hysterical. Oh my God, it's so funny. The writing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Free writing. Well, that's
a lot of
question.
A lot of improv.
It is a lot of improv.
Yep.
Have you thought about screenwriting? You know, making this into like a screenplay?
So
adaptation.
If somebody approached me, I probably wouldn't say no. I would then have to take a crash course. But fortunately, I have two friends, Jerry, who is really good at screenwriting. And Wendy, who has now got into like writing plays, who could help me out with that. And then Scott, my publisher, he also does some script writing. He's actually working on a short form film of his own now. But yeah, and I have been approached like dozens and dozens and dozens of times by comic book artists and comic book creators to do scripts for them. I find script writing to be, it's difficult for me. Like I can't do all the stage direction I want to. Like I can't have a book. It's something I might delve into later on, but I prefer novel writing.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it kind of
just get by on the dialogue alone.
Well, the kind of characters you were describing for your book, it sounds like it could potentially be a property for a graphic novel kind of translation or adaptation, definitely, with those kind of characters.
So, sort of like, I don't tell many people this, so the main character, Draven, is 50% my older brother, who is this sort of like scheming little dude who was always looking for some angle or some shortcut. And John and Scott from the rundown. he's sort of like this weird amalgamation of those two people.
That is awesome. Yeah, that sounds. I'm definitely intrigued by everything I've heard about your book. Yeah.
You would love it. So Kel, who is like this big sort of dopey barbarian, but I decided to throw him a curveball when I wrote this last revision before we published of giving him an anxiety disorder. So like when he was in his tribe, he felt very powerful. And then he gets this calling to his God and he's taken out of everything that he knows. And he's like, you know, on flat land and he's suddenly in this city where they're like, you know, dozens of people all around him, and he starts having panic attacks and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And he has to get like a little, you know, talking to by his God before he can kind of start getting that under control. And then we have Helena, who is a very rigid, uptight knight who's very proper. And she's all about obeying everything. And her goddess is Valeris, who is the goddess of justice. And she is determined that she will be the champion who fixes everything, and really she isn't, although she kind of is. She's they both. And then we have Sigurus, who's the big bad guy, and Delona, who's a sliver of a goddess. Like, in my world, goddesses and gods are so powerful, their presence will actually disrupt the physical plane if they manifest for very long. So they actually create shards of themselves. They're like little tiny slivers of themselves that they give human life, so that they can kind of interact with the physical world without destroying it too much. And then those slivers actually sort of take on a life of their own, especially if they're left too long on their own.
Uh-huh.
And that's Nelona.
That's intriguing.
Draven sliver. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with the world building on that. You'd be surprised. I did a huge amount of world building for this, given the fact that it's a 350-page book. But there was a lot that I managed to cram into that happily.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean, that's always
has like a bad guy of his own.
That's what I always tell people. Behind a good series, there's a huge depth of world building that never, you know, a lot of it doesn't even make it onto the actual page, but it's reinforcing everything. I mean, there's just a whole foundation.
Absolutely. I learned about fantasy writing was also from Wendy Vogel. Like I hate like that. I know I sound like a big fanboy, and I really kind of am. But only tell me what I need to know when I need to know that. And when you do that, you create these scenes that are so fast and they move so quickly and they're driven, especially if there's good dialogue. And I hope that most of my dialogue is good. It's like, it's my favorite thing to write, to be honest. And that way you create this really interesting world. You can then have your characters moving and doing things, and the plot moves quickly. And readers, I think in general, still feel very, very satisfied that they're getting a nice amount of the world, because they're getting it when they really need to know it. It's like, I will never forget it, like reading Tad Williams books when I was a kid, and like literally the first 50 pages would be this like sort of this treatise on the socio-political structure of this particular city or this particular nation, and how all the magic works and how all that. And so you have to wade through like 50 or 60 pages of all that just to begin to get to the point where something starts happening. So one of the things that we reinforce in my writing group is when we start out, we need something happening, and we need somebody to want something, and we need something to be getting in the way of that person getting what they want.
Avoid the info dump. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
that puts
the brakes on things real quick.
Especially if you're a writer with a really good voice, but I think even then, you know, like people are gonna still just want, you know, something where a series where something is happening. There are few people who can get away with that. Jim Butcher was great at getting away with that.
Yeah.
Like, he could just, like, droll on as, like, Harry Dresden forever and ever and ever, or an Aeronauts Windlass, where, you know, like, you get several POVs from the cat's perspective, which were still a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, there's cases
about what they for four or five pages, and it's like, hey, reel it in, buddy, reel it in. Yeah.
But there are cases where you do need a little dash of info dump to make sense, especially in some like epic fantasy and so forth. But you're right. I mean, it has to be done the right way and strategically, you know, as far as like where it's placed. But yeah, because otherwise it does serve as like a huge break on the pacing. And can really bog down the reader.
Right out of the story, you know.
Even though it's tempting when you build this massive world.
I swear we'll do a glossary for the second book. Like, some people complain I didn't do a glossary for this one because I hate them.
Oh, no.
They help. They do help, though.
They do help.
One of the writers I'm editing for right now, I had to get Autumn to do one because they did have a lot of very specific terms that, you know, they were part of their world building and things like that. And I say, like, yeah, you do need a little reference in the back for some readers. And I think it would, you know, so yeah, it does help. It does help.
I remember loving those when I was a kid, when I read paperbacks and physical books. But like now that so many times we're reading things as ebooks or audiobooks, you never really refer to those because it's just a hassle to like go and try to like flip back and go to your original place. So I don't think I've used a glossary or looked at a map in an ebook in the entire times I've been reading books electronically.
Wow.
Huh.
So that's the reason why I left those out of Heartmaster.
Yeah, as a Tolkien influenced person, yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, I do deep dives into glossaries, and well, Silmarillion being a really big one.
I do it. Even paranormal, you know, if it's a vampire novel, I will go look if they got a glossary to figure out who did what, where they're from, you know, the little bit of back, you know, story. So I can understand their character a little bit better.
In some series it's necessary, like Song of Ice and Fire from George R. R. Martin, where you have all the different houses and all the different people and all the it's so complex and such a huge ensemble. You almost do need an appendix or glossary, you know, the back. So some types of series.
It's like with Wheel of Time, you need that companion book that goes along with it that explains who all the characters are. Because I remember trying to read Wheel of Time, and there was one entire book where you didn't see Matt at all. And like by the time I got it, I was like, what was even going on with that?
Right.
Yep,
what's going on?
Yeah, so some of the later books, they bogged for me a little bit in that series, but that's a good one. That is a good series, but I do know where the pacing really hit slow mode for a while. there were some books that meandered a bit in the middle of that series.
With epic fantasy, because with epic fantasy you need a ton of characters, but then like it becomes so expansive in that you have so many characters and trying to get any kind of development on all of them. I see that, like, even one of my favorite authors, Kristen Britton, struggles with that with Green Rider. It's a difficult tightrope to walk.
It is.
And then before you know it, you end up having 1,000-page books.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
The legendary doorstopper. Absolutely.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Steven's
that's awesome.
Not that there's anything wrong with 1,000-page books. Some of them are awesome. Some of them are not. Took me 4 trials to read Battlefield Earth.
That's a weapon.
Yeah, I have not written a 1,000-page book yet, Holly. That was over 700, but not 1,000. So Holly's going to start a well, we'll see. But I do know what he said.
Scott, my editor and publisher, is a fairly tough taskmaster. He tries to keep me right at 85 or 90,000 words. So he's like, oh yeah, we need to trim a little bit off of this. So I'm like, oh yeah, I trimmed a bunch of stuff. Oh yeah, and also I wrote a new chapter one because originally in the draft that we first had, the first chapter actually started with Seguris. And that just never sat right with me. I just needed something that started with Draven. So I read him the first chapter, and he's like, great, Nick, thanks. I admire anyone who's willing to edit for me because I'm one of those recalcitrant writers who I do everything that somebody asks me, but, I also usually find some way to go that little extra mile to make it weird.
Well, sure.
Of course.
Yeah, you got to write what's coming from within. Yeah, absolutely.
You write for you. You write for you, not everybody else. That's what I tell people. Don't worry.
Yep.
Don't worry about everybody else. You write for you, and somebody out there will love it. There's somebody for everything. You write for you.
Yeah, and Scott, Wendy, Jerry, if you're listening, I am sorry. I know I caused some gray hairs, but I love you guys.
Well, it just sounds magnificent. I need to put this on my list now to read once I get through the Books of Blood again by Clive Barker.
Barker. Oh my God, I love that guy. Yeah. Everything was shit. That was even Clive Barker. Everything was everybody was shit. But man, he was so great. I love so many of his books. Imagica, the Books of Blood.
Oh yes. And Imagica was a complex book. Yeah, that was a big one. That was a doorstopper.
It was so good. And a dude who never gets the love that he should is Brian Lumley. best yes. like, sort of vampire like,
Thank
tape
you.
That I had
Thank
ever read.
You.
You know, the Outer
the Necroscope series.
And Harry Keough, this guy.
Yeah, the Necroscope
you know, like,
series, yeah.
Teleport around. Oh, my God. Those were some of the best horror novels I ever read. And I couldn't believe it. Like, almost nobody I know, even at the time, had even ever heard of them. I was like, everybody
me.
Knew, like, all the Stephen King stuff. But I was like, no,
you just
didn't
know me yet. I was reading those way back in the day, and the Blood Brothers trilogy in his series was just amazing when they went to Starside, and you got to see the vampire world. That was awesome.
Yep.
I mean, I just thought those books were on fire. I mean, yeah, because it was so different,
that was
so imaginative.
Creative, and, yeah, I want to say I read those back in the 90s or early
2000s. Yep, 90s is when I read them.
Probably
yeah, back in the 90s.
What is it?
I've told you about them. I've told you about them, Holly, several times.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I have a vampire.
Oh, yeah,
I
Holly, you
got
to read these books.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
have to read those books. They're some of the most creative and interesting vampire books ever.
Yeah, they call them the Wampree. You know, I guess I pronounce it right, hopefully. The Wampree or the Vampree. Yeah, that was awesome, man. Yeah, it's a really, really good. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting concept with the idea, yeah, you know, the Mobius continuum and the idea of you know all these kind of disembodied spirits are kind of in limbo that were sitting there thinking and then finally Harry could talk to them and so they could finally you know have somebody to you know to share their what they've been you know mulling over for all this time and yeah, just all the it was just so cool it was. Really interesting, yeah. From a lot of angles,
it was definitely way ahead of its time, and then for like 20 years after that, you saw people kind of like variably ripping that off in several ways.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Lumley is phenomenal. I'm so glad to actually hear somebody that appreciates him because I bring him up to every vampire discussion. I bring him up to people, and I'm like nobody knows who. Yeah, it's like man.
Oh.
I mean,
well, I like, don't know because I've read like so.
Yeah.
Vampires, you know, novels.
Yeah, and they would translate. They would be an atmospheric film in a second. I mean, if they were done right, adapted well, you know, they would be really intense. I mean, it would be really good. You know, that's why I'm surprised that as a property it hasn't been picked up by some streaming
service.
Yeah, I'm still
amazed nobody's ever picked up that IP.
Yeah,
it was the same
amazing.
Way. Like I never really, you know, like saw how nobody like really did really great stuff with the Edgar Rice Burroughs stuff. Granted, it is like a little dated, but now I will say that was it IDW or Dynamite? I think it was Dynamite did some good John Carter comics, especially focusing on Deja Thoris.
Oh,
yeah, I just rewatched the Disney movie a couple weeks ago and thought, you know, this was a little bit of a train wreck, but it wasn't that bad of a train wreck.
I enjoyed it. I'm one of the people that actually enjoyed that. I mean, I'm not gonna say no, it's a great movie, but I did enjoy it. I mean, I really did. Yeah, like you know, it was a good fun time. Yeah, you know, watching that one. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's not.
It was definitely
better
than the train wreck of a Conan movie that they did with Jason Momoa. And how you do a terrible Conan movie with Jason Momoa is still beyond me.
Yeah, because he's such a talent. Yeah, I mean, I thought, I'll just give my quick 2 cents, but I thought the main problem was they just didn't have enough of a potent villain in the way that like James Earl Jones was in the first one. They needed somebody with that magnitude. The guy they had in that one I thought was a good actor, but he was more of a lieutenant type character than he should have been the big baddie. And I think that was the core problem. They just didn't have that larger than life villain that I think you really kind of need, something like that.
Yeah, they needed the guy with the sword hand from the Savage Sword series. Ah, what was his name?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. Barak
al-Sharif or something like that. Like he had lost a hand because of Conan at some point, and he had this like little pouch of weapons that he would just fix onto this metal piece he fitted over his stump. Like he was great. He was a fabulous villain. He was very silently whiplash, but he was also so menacing at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you do need. Yeah, you can have a great hero, but yeah, unless you're pitted against a villain that is more than two dimensional, or you gotta have the balance there. You gotta have somebody who really is a challenge. And yeah, I think that was the main problem.
Well, that is the one challenge of adapting Conan, is because Conan is like, so all of the original short stories were mainly short stories. So it's kind of like when you know, why it took so long to really get really good adaptions of Poirot, you know, like, because, you know, the, you have to have somebody who has a lot of respect and a lot of love for that medium. And I think, like, David Suchet's, like, you know, being such a champion of Poirot is what actually made that so popular for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So until we have somebody like that for Conan, I don't see anything really, really big or long lasting happening. But I would love to see it happen because the first book I ever bought was Princess of Mars, and like literally the second book I bought was the one with red nails, and I can't remember the name of it. It was like the second or third in the Conan series that was redone by L. Sprague de Camp and Lynn Carter.
Mm-hmm.
That brought all of the Howard stuff together and actually completed, you know, the unfinished pieces.
Nice. Nice. Well, you got off on the right foot then, for sure, as far as your influences. Yeah, that is fantastic. Yeah, I got into Howard a little bit later after, not later. I mean, I was still, about in high school when I got into Howard, but a little after I'd, you know, gone through the full wave of Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and things like that. So, yeah, he was in my kind of like next phase. And, yeah, I just loved it.
I was actually reading
all
Howard
in.
Before I got into kindergarten.
Wow. Oh, nice.
it was funny. I remember being in kindergarten, and I actually had it was either Princess of Mars or Warlord of Mars, and it had like those Michael Wheaton. It was back. It was the late 70s, early 80s edition where Michael Whelan had done the covers, and they were slightly risque. And the teacher took the book away from me because they're like, "There's no way you have possibly read this." And then. You know, she made me prove it by saying, "Read the, you know, like the first paragraph," and I did. And then she took it away and she called my mom. And she's like, "You cannot bring these things to class." You know, everybody else is doing, like, you know, the quick brown box. You know, it's like, because I taught myself to read when I was a kid with comic books.
Yeah,
I think I taught myself to read at about the age of like 5 or 6 years old with comic books.
And then
I started getting into like novels shortly thereafter.
I was reading like the Richie Rich and all them like from the comic strips in the Sunday paper.
I fell in love with Thor from like the first moment. Thor and Aquaman were my two favorite characters initially.
Nice.
When I was a kid,
I loved Spider-Man, Batman, all them.
These days I see a kid excited about reading, and I'm like, go for it. I'd be tempted just go for it.
No matter what.
We have grandchildren now, and I'm just counting the days until I can start getting them started on reading.
Yeah.
I've got a project on me here because the young ones here didn't get the fire lit in their early days on reading, but I'm seeing itches now. I'm starting to see a little bit of itch, and they're starting to warm up to the idea of it now that they've been kind of working with us a bit, and they're schooling, and
they're really enjoying English now, and they don't.
Yeah, really
know,
are.
We do.
It's coming.
It's coming. Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Yeah.
So I have hope here.
I already got infected with the Power Rangers bug, so I feel like it's just a matter of time before I get hooked on books.
A nudge. That's nice.
Yeah. As I said, you know, you don't have to be picky. It don't have to be Tolkien starting out. It could be Power Rangers or Superman or whatever. You know, whatever piques their interest. You know, that's what I tell these kids. They're just like, we didn't like reading, you know, before. And I'm like, yes, you just didn't find the right book. You know, you got
to
find
or you're forced
you like,
forced to read things you don't like. Yeah, you got to find something that you learn to enjoy it, that you can enjoy it. Yeah, as well. I mean, you can't give kids Brothers Karamazov.
Oh, yeah.
You can't give a 10-year-old Brothers Karamazov or something, expect them to have a good time.
Right.
So,
right. You give them stuff they're into, you know. And they have a good time, you know. And that's it.
That's true. But
Holmes was another one of my early favorites.
Yeah. Yep.
I read this like crazy when I was about 8 or 9.
Oh yeah. Good stuff.
Choose Your Travel. I love those. Choose Your Story. You had to choose what you're going to do next. Those were the best. There was the old Scholastic Reading Program and in school, and Choose Your Stories. And they had all kinds. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were cross genres, you know. But, yeah, you choose what you would do next, and that's where the story would go.
Choose Your Adventure.
TSR had some great books. TSR had some great books on their Dungeons & Dragons IP. And then there was, like,
they did.
Had some great ones, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those were fun. I think Witty has actually written one of those. I can't remember. I can't remember which IP she wrote that for, but I know Wendy's written one. Wendy's done almost everything at this point. She's just our titan. She's our legend.
Right. In our tribe.
In fact, like she was actually like one of my early inspirations in Cincinnati fiction writers, because so I'd gone to a meeting and I'd gotten this short story completely eviscerated. And granted, it was fairly terrible at the time, but like it was my first meeting. Nobody else brought anything. I just happened to have a copy of the short story called Stoneheart. And John Burroughs, who was the leader of the group at the time, completely eviscerated it. And then, ironically, I didn't end up going back for 6 months because the next day I had to go to California for a big migration. We were migrating a company's data center from Texas to ours in Hamilton, Ohio, and I didn't end up going back for 6 months. And the first meeting I went back to, you know, somebody had said, hey, you know, a lot of us have published works out there. It would be great if some of the members could go out and review stuff that people would publish. The first book I chose was Flamewalker by Wendy Vogel. And like, I was so incredibly entranced by her world. You know, it's great world building. It was a great story. It was a fantastic protagonist, really great antagonist. In fact, if you read Heartmaster, Seguris is partially influenced by Adon the Black in Flamewalker. Sorry, Wendy, I stole part of your character. I've apologized before. You've forgiven me already. It's all good. So I wrote this incredibly long review. I don't even remember how long it was. Probably a good 600-800 words. And it was interesting to people that Wendy's publisher actually put part of that review on a flyer for Flamewalker. It's still hanging on my wall.
Wow.
That's cool. All right.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
So Nicholas, what do you have? Oh, sorry, Holly. What were you going to ask?
Oh, I was going to ask you, when you had your initial release, did you do like a book tour? Did you have a thing at that pub, or how did you?
So we didn't really do a book tour. We did the book launch, and then we also did a big art campaign, which you know worked pretty well. I think I got about 30 or 40% of the people that we sent arcs to actually put reviews on Amazon, which if you guys have ever tried to do this before, you know, that's actually a pretty good return. And then I had a fair amount of like encouragement and interest, you know, like the pub was great as far as like accommodating us for the book launch. And then I did a bunch of promotion since then. I really probably should do a signing at an actual bookstore, and that's something I need to do soon. But sadly, my company's in the middle of this big migration, so it's kind of hard for me to plan stuff around that. But you know, I would love to do a tour at some point. I don't have the money to finance that right yet.
It's so much fun. You would really have a blast.
Yeah, and you do have some good bookstores that have cropped up recently, not far from you, down here right outside of Lexington, Georgetown, Fabled Forest Bookstore, new independent bookstore. It's fabulous, with Bobby Craig as the owner there. And then we had Lynn Tincher on recently, who has From the Ground Up books, in that's in LaGrange, Kentucky, right outside of Louisville. But, yeah, neither of those are far from Cincinnati.
I caught the tail end of her talk, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, those would be good places for you. Yeah, I know you could get in there and do some signings.
She's scheduled up through March, but yeah, you could definitely get in there. you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to, like, we have another a good bookstore here called Cincy Book Rack, mm-hmm. which is really great. I know one of the authors who actually works there, J.S. Bailey, who has some really great sort of exorcist fiction. And I really want to do that. I need to go and get some more books first. I'm down to about, I think I have about 5 hardbacks left from the book mm-hmm. launch. And I've actually sold about, I think I sold about 7 or 8 more since the book launch, just to people online, which, it's like, man, like mailing books sucks these days, guys, man. It's terrible.
Oh yeah. It's gotten pricey.
Even like media mail, you have to do the stamps.com, mm-hmm. if you want to actually get media mail rates, unless you're actually willing to sit there and wait at the counter, which, at my local post office takes about 1.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, that was
I understand.
I learned new respect for those people on Kickstarter who get like these 250 backers where they have to send all this stuff out on their own.
Oh.
Yep. That's a project.
So yeah, because man, just to send in like 2 or 3 books out, like it's a challenge. Like,
right.
No, granted, I have a 50 or 60 hour week day job, so that probably doesn't help.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's not fun these days. For sure. But what do you have coming up? Do you have anything appearance-wise coming up that you wish to tell us about in the next few months on your schedule? Anything coming up, either convention-wise or whatever?
So I think I have anything coming up until Gym City in Dayton, which will mm-hmm. be in July.
Okay.
And then after that would be, let's see, it's July 22nd and 23rd. Sadly, I probably should have thought of Imagineering, but like I just like it didn't even occur to me until like I think Jerry had shared the form for submitting your book for review for Imagineering's awards for the year, and I did go ahead and enter Heartmaster in for that. So, hopefully somebody on the panel will get to read it. but yeah, definitely maybe we'll try to get something going for 2025 with Imagineering, because it was a fun show and it's not too far from us, so
right.
I definitely love to check out the new venue.
We'll be in Dayton in
July, and then in September we'll be doing the Cincinnati Comic Expo, which we do every year,
yep.
And which I think this year will actually be in Sharonville, because the Duke Energy Center is doing some big modifications. But those are the two big shows that we do every year.
Fantastic. And as far as where readers and people that want to connect with you or follow you, where do you want to send them as far as websites and any social media handles?
NicholasEverhart.com is a place where they can find links to pretty much everything. I will also go ahead and paste this link to the Amazon page in the chat, which you guys can copy off if you want to. So that's the Amazon link, NicholasEverhart.com. Easy to look up on Facebook as well, because, the amount of people who spell it N-I-K-O-L-A-S is almost, like, unreal.
Sorry.
Awesome.
This is the upside. I'm very easy to look up on Amazon and Facebook.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, you are. I had no trouble bringing your stuff up when I was getting ready for the show.
Nope. Right up.
Yeah, not
and,
at
and,
all.
And that is also partially due to my publisher, who did an amazing job, with getting everything posted on Amazon and getting everything tweaked so that it actually come up properly. Scott McMahon with Dragon's Free Press has been absolutely amazing. They're kind of a boutique publisher. They have about, 5 or 10 books out right now. Heartmaster was the latest release. I'm not sure what the next one is going to be. It might be either my first book in Ridge of Bones, or it could be Heartmaster 2, or they also have another great mm-hmm. series there called Dragoneer by Amber Boudreau, who is a very talented mm-hmm. YA author. I know she's currently hard at work on doing some updates to her book three. So we'll see who gets to win the race on who gets to be the next
nice
publication from Dragon Tree. But they're really great, like young boutique press, but they have a lot of energy and creativity. And their editing staff is really fun to work with, and they were really sweet. They let me actually choose my own cover art. So if you look up Heartmaster, the cover art is actually done by this incredible artist that I met at Cincinnati Comic Expo a couple of years ago, named Jay DeFoy. He has been an incredibly, incredibly easy guy to work with. So he did the cover, and he did a nice. So we did the main image that you see on the front, and then like we went back to him and said, "Hey, could you do like some extra stuff for a wraparound cover?" And he threw all that in. He only charged me like an extra maybe $50 for all that. So he was a really great, talented artist to work with, and he's a fantastic guy. You can look him up on Instagram if anybody's interested in a cover artist.
Absolutely. Oh yes, yeah, good cover artists is worth their weight in gold, absolutely. Well, is there anything that we have not covered tonight that you wanted to promote or make us aware of? So we'll make sure you get a chance to talk about everything you wanted to tonight.
No, well, actually, for the most part, I think we've done a good job with that. I will say, for anyone who is looking for a good writers group and have not been able to find one, like our meetup group, we actually meet online for critiques, in person on off weeks, and I will go ahead and post that link in the chat as well, that you can share out to anybody. We accept pretty much anyone, as long as you're respectful and are respectful to other people, and we do everything impossible to help people succeed, and our motto is we love to participate in other people's success.
That's awesome. Holly, make sure we copy that so we can get that in the Star Chamber Show channels. We'll post that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're like about 400 odd members or so and growing. We get about 20 or 30
wow.
people on the critique nights. And we do this interesting thing with the critiques, so we get two people to present 10 pages. And we take turns reading them aloud so the author can hear what their work sounds like when read by, you know, like 5 or 10
mm-hmm.
different people. And so you find out where people are stumbling on your work. And then we offer constructive critiques on what we think can be done to make the work better, the things we like, the things we didn't like, the things that we think that could be done to improve it. And although it was always hard to hear 20 well-intentioned people, even well-intentioned people, kicking your baby around, it is some of the most important things to hear. And I will say that don't be afraid. Like if anybody wants to join, tell them don't be afraid if they don't want to present anything for several months at a time. Because I will say I have learned more just listening to other people get critiqued. For one thing, you're exposed to so many different genres. But when you hear other people do critique, you don't have any skin in the game. So you can be so much more objective. And so you can really absorb all of the critique that they're getting and kind of understand how to apply that to your own work. And also be able to figure out how like things that are working well in like a romance story might apply to like my fantasy novel. Because I will say that like one of the readers, Jenny Cornell, was amazing. Because she is someone who would probably never pick up a fantasy novel. She fell in love with my main character, Draven. And so that made me understand that, hey, this character is interesting to somebody who isn't really going to normally read a fantasy novel. So I know what to focus on. I know what my targets are, and I know that I'm doing a pretty good job of hitting them. And I know where to continue to focus my goals on. So when you present to 20 people who probably read and write in like a dozen different genres and you get critique from all of them, my God, it is so incredibly, incredibly, incredibly useful to figure out how of these various people react to your work. I cannot underscore how important it is to join a writer's group, especially a balanced one like the one we have. and get critique from a bunch of different people and figure out what works for you and what doesn't. And I will say that for anyone who is getting critique from multiple sources, remember, you need to take what works for you and what doesn't. And it, you need to figure out, like, what you need to apply and what you don't. So many people will get a bunch of critique and they feel like they need to fix everything. No, you need to apply what works for you.
For you,
day, it's still going to be your name.
And not lose your voice. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
That's
and don't lose your voice.
You cannot take the author's voice. You know, and that's the great thing about finding a trusted editor is that they're not trying to take over your voice.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, yeah, this has been an awesome visit, and I've learned a lot about you, and it's amazing. We have so much common territory ranging from the genre you write and the music you listen to and the kind of approach you have. And this is great. So I hope we hear about you often in the future.
Yeah,
and I'm going to turn this over to Holly to round it up with you and close us out. But yeah, definitely want you back and keep us posted and definitely keep in contact and we'll have you back for sure.
Oh yeah.
Fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, we loved having you. Thank you so much for joining us and all your insight. Yeah, I mean, the listeners out there, they probably learned quite a bit tonight. I mean, that's phenomenal.
I hope so.
You know, a good critique group, that's very important. We always touch on that in Imagineering, too. You know, I try to touch on that because we have a lot of people from different writing groups. And the importance of a good writing group.
A good one.
So
keep
sharing your experiences and all that with us. And, don't be a stranger. And keep us up to date on everything.
I will definitely not be.
Yeah, thank you so much. And
thanks.
Everybody out there, join us next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great show.
Okay.
Another great guest. Another great talk. Be creative for the rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend. Good night, all.
Thanks. Good night.
Thank you.